sir. We promised you a great
gorgeous
main
George. Here we come.
Andre,
the Giant.
WrestleMania.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
The Right Hook is a Pantsless Aggression production.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah!
I hope no bad people show up.
Disregard that, Frank. It's a bunch of liberal bullshit.
Been alive, see the top of the rock still. From the streets to Shanghai, back to Knoxville. Sitting high on the mountain rock, on the top, spreading the good news. Been a lot of false prophets, taking quick hits. And a lot of un-American bullshit. But the time has come to settle, and the devil's gonna make you choose. And just like a cold wind blowing, can you feel me coming?
Happy birthday, America, and greetings from Olcon East. You know what time it is? Time for your 60-minute dose of sucker-free conservatism that the hustlers, the killers, the murderers, drug dealers, and even the strippers like to refer to as the Right Hook. I, of course, am your host, the Rated R Republican, the social media messiah, blogger without a cause, and not only a voice for the voiceless, but the heart and soul of YR's nationwide. Long Island's own John Brodigan, doing it loud, doing it proud, doing it for the people, and doing it just because I was recently voted the 19th sexiest conservative in new media. So to quote that great conservative philosopher Sean Carter, I'm about to call the paparazzi on myself. But yes, if you've been listening to the FTR radio this week, you know that the superbly titled website, Dirty Sex and Politics, aka www.dirtysexandpolitics.com. They did their, I guess it's going to be an annual, it's the first time they've done it, survey of the 20th sexiest men in conservative new media. And yours truly came in with 19 and a bullet, which is, even if I didn't win, it's an honor just to be objectified. But yeah, there you go. I'm sexy and I know it. But that being said, thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show. Actually, all this month, we're going to be on the Road to Smart Girl Summit 2012. If you've been following this show or been following me for a while, you know that both myself, FTR Radio, we always have had a strong working relationship with the girls of Smart Girl Politics. We all started off together. A lot of us got our start in politics for the basically two reasons. One, our frustration with the 2008 presidential race, and B, because we had a serious crush on Tabitha Hale. So that's how we got started, and we're very excited to be involved with Smart Goal Summit 2012 for the fourth year in a row. So all this week we'll be talking about – all this week, all this month we'll be talking about the summit. We're going to have a great lineup of female conservatives. In a couple weeks, we're going to be doing the first ever live broadcast of The Right Hook with my very special co-host, Dina Fraioli, and I'm very excited about that. But as for this week, we'll be talking to the head smart girl in charge, the founder of Smart Girl Politics, Stacey Mott. And by the way, also a birthday girl, but we'll get to that later. We'll also be talking to Congresswoman Diane Black from Tennessee, who will be telling us about the Obamacare bill and basically how it affects, has a negative impact on the medical profession and also the negative impact on the small businesses. And considering she is a small business owner and a nurse, she gets a little insight on both areas. And we will also be talking to – actually, I was having a conversation with people this week. One of them brought up some house races in Massachusetts, and I've been telling people, listen, I mean, while states like Massachusetts and New York are in no way, shape, or form going to go to Mitt Romney this year, don't sleep in the congressional races, because I know in New York we've got at least six potential pickups to add to like the seven that we already have. And we're going to be talking to Andrea Bozic, who's the Deputy Communications Director from the NRCC. And she'll be talking to us about a couple of those pickups, specifically since she's from Buffalo, the three we have in Western New York, because if we don't win those three seats, we should all find something else to do with ourselves. But that being said, our first guest, like I said, birthday girl, founder of Smart Girl Politics, good friend of the show. We've always been a good friend of theirs, making her long overdue return. I want to see what you should know it. Happy birthday, Stacey Mott. Welcome back to the Right Hook.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
How's New Jersey treating you today?
New Jersey's hot today.
And actually,
just getting ready for the 4th. We're looking forward to just hanging out with friends and family and cooking out.
But actually, speaking of which, and we'll get this Smart Girl Summit 2012 in a second. But I know you've probably already had people pitching you a location for Smart Girl Summit 2013. I just want to point out that your governor is running for re-election in 2013, and his lieutenant governor is a smart girl, and you wouldn't have to travel far. So just keep that in mind.
While I would thoroughly enjoy having a New Jersey Smart Girl Summit, it looks as though we will be taking Summit to the West Coast next year.
Okay, well. I'll get one of these things in the Northeast eventually.
But, I'm right there with you, though. I fight for New York and New Jersey all the time.
But that's 2013. We've got Smart Girl Summit 2012 coming up. For people who may not know, and if they don't know, I don't know what they're doing listening to the show. What is the Smart Girl Summit, and what can we expect in a couple weeks?
Well, Smart Girl Summit is our annual conference. This is our 4th annual Smart Girl Summit. It's being held in Alexandria, Virginia, July 20th through the 21st. We have a fantastic lineup, and we're still adding speakers. In fact, there's a couple of our more famous or well-known speakers who are still signing on. Those last-minute ones are always the best ones. Last year, I was in the car driving, already headed to Summit, when I learned that Andrew Breitbart would be joining us at the last second. So, we're still a little over 2 weeks away, and we have a couple big names still to add to the lineup. So we're getting excited about that.
And it says the overall theme is focusing on women in the economy. Why is that so important?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the so-called war on women, and the bottom line is that the economy impacts every single one of us, regardless of, you know, your gender roles. Obviously the economy is going to play a huge part in 2012, in November, and we just felt that, you know, it was time for us to educate our members, educate our attendees. We're not just educating them on the economy. Obviously, we all know the economy sucks. But, you know, taking that information and sharing it with others, and then how can you take that information and really reach out to people who maybe weren't inclined to vote in the past, or are kind of fence sitters and decide at the last second? You know, if we can provide this information to our membership and to everyone who's coming to Smart Girl Summit, we'll give them the tools necessary to go back and really hammer, you know, the message home to their friends and family.
And speaking of that, and speaking of the war on women, I've noticed something this time around, because though it hasn't been called the quote-unquote war on women, I mean, Democrats have done this every election cycle for the past 40 or 50 years, where they manage to convince people that if you oppose abortion and you oppose, like, contraceptives, that means you hate women. They tried doing it this year, and people seem not to be buying it. Do you think that's because there's more information available, or have we just gotten better with the pushback?
I think it's a few different things. I think, A, we've gotten better at the pushback, without a doubt. I think, B, as I just said, the economy, you know, is hurting so many people that, you know, a lot of people who maybe were single-issue voters in the past, the economy's kind of trumping that at this point. So I think we're pushing back. I think the economy tanking is hurting people. And I also think people are so much smarter. you know, let's be honest, while many of us, you know, while many people would love to see Roe v. Wade either have limitations or overturned, it's not going to happen anytime soon. And I think people realize that and at this point are saying, you know, I'm voting what's affecting me and impacting my life at this point. And, you know, there's bigger fish to fry. It's not that it's not important to a lot of people. It is on both sides of the aisle. I just think that the economy right now is trumping everything. And, you know, as you said, we're pushing back a lot harder on every issue that they bring up.
Which is, and speaking of which, because I don't know if this is because we've gotten let me try that again without stuttering. I don't know if it's because we've gotten better at pushing back, or if maybe it's because that people aren't buying it. Liberals seem to be getting more and more unhinged with their attacks on women. Case in point, one of your one of your speakers is in a couple of weeks, the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and you know comments like that that were directed towards her by a local radio show host. Bill Maher's comments, you can't log into Facebook and post something like I'm going to a Smart Girl Summit without having like you know some like idiot New York liberal commenting. It's like, oh, well, if they're really smart girls, they'd be liberals. Does it get to a point where, I mean, you just like roll your eyes at how like ridiculous and unhinged they're getting? Or do some of the offensive ones, like, you know something? I need to beat the crap out of you now.
No, honestly, it's all game. Anybody who enters politics, regardless of what position they're playing, you know, whether they're a candidate or just, you know, kind of on the sidelines or working on campaigns or working on issues, if you get into this game, you know what's coming towards you. I mean, anytime that we make a statement or put out an email or, you know, just try to inform voters on different issues, we get the blowback. You're always going to have that. I mean, we used to joke that, you know, any time that a conservative woman would post a blog, you'd have your pet liberal who always had to jump in there and give their opinion. But you know what? It's America. That's what we're all about. I mean, of course, you're going to have some snide comments. I mean, without a doubt, we do not get anything like people such as Michelle Malkin or Dana Loesch or, you know, a lot of the higher, you know, more well-known conservative women get, but and Sarah Palin obviously gets the worst of the worst. You know, but we all get it, and it's a game. You're used to playing it. You know it's coming, and you just kind of blow it off at this point.
Yeah. And the main thing I like going to this like Smart Girl Summit every year, at least any time I can make it, is because we all seem to like started like around the same time, right after the 2008 election. Smart Girl Summit, FTR Ada before it was RFC, and when you look back 4 years later, are you amazed at how much you guys have grown from just being like, you know, four girls during the can-can on stage at like the 9/12 march in 2009?
We are. I mean, it's amazing just to see the journey, and you know, the other thing that's great is watching a lot of the people who started with Smart Girls even 4 years ago who have gone on to, you know, people like Tabitha Hale with the Franklin Center now, and you know, Jenny Beth Martin with Tea Party Patriots, Amy Kramer with Tea Party Express. I mean, all of these gals started as our core group 4 years ago, and they're still very close to us. You know, we still consider them Smart Girls. So it's amazing how much the organization has grown, and it's really, truly amazing to watch how our core group of women from 4 years ago have really branched out and taken this conservative movement by storm.
Are there any particular conservative women coming up, either running for office or reporting or getting involved in public office that you've got your eye on or that you think we should keep our eye on?
You know, there's a couple gals. I'm really big into watching the next generation and kind of mentoring the next generation. And we have a couple gals who are Smart Girls that are both going to be at Smart Girl Summit. One of them is Madeline McCullough, she is just a spitfire who is blogging, and she had a video recently, a pro-life video recently that, you know, pretty much went viral, and she was attacked, and I believe she's 16 or 17 years old. We have an intern with us right now, Bethany Bowra, who is a great blogger. She will also be at Summit doing a lot of live blogging for us. She is a fantastic blogger. She's been blogging with us for a year, and I believe she's 17 as well. There's a lot of gals like these girls who are just, you know, I can tell you I was not into politics at age 17. So to see these girls, you know, really taking a hold and taking the issues and taking a stand, even though it's not necessarily the most popular thing to do or they're not, you know, seen as being cool in school, you know, obviously high school and college, you're more liberal than anything. So to see these girls taking that conservative stand and really standing up to their friends and putting themselves out there, it's fantastic to see. But there's a lot of candidates. We have Anna Little in New Jersey running. You know, she has a great shot. You have Martha Zoller and Maria Sheffield down in Georgia. You know, you have Karen Harrington, who's running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. There's a lot of great conservative women running for office this year, and, you know, your listeners can go to our website and learn the ones that we're following and that we'll be getting ready to endorse a few ourselves.
So a couple weeks, you know, we go to SMRCL Summit. We listen to great speakers. We leave renewed. What's next for SMRCL politics as a whole?
There's a lot of things that we're working on. We have a lot of events that we've been working on around the country. We just had a huge event down in Atlanta, Georgia. It was our first regional kind of Smart Girl Summit. It was a fantastic event put on by our state coordinator, Cheryl Levitt. We have July 14th in New Hampshire. We have a Armed and Fabulous gun shoot put on by our New Hampshire state group. July 31st, we have an event going on in New Jersey as well, in Westfield, New Jersey. It's celebrating Milton Friedman. And then, obviously, we have Smart Girl Summit. And I'll be in New York August 4th doing Blogger. We actually will have representation in a pseudo-liberal conference, so it'll be interesting to visit their Blogger conference. And then September, October, November, there's several states that will be focused on, Arizona and Virginia, but particularly we will have a lot of our staff going into Ohio.
Okay. Well, Stacey Mott, founder, den mother, creator of SMRCL Politics and everything that's come since then, thanks for joining us on the show tonight. We will see you in a couple weeks. Looking forward to it, and go back to enjoy your birthday. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Right Hook on the mighty FDR Radio.
I got a couple addictions, but I swear that I'm coming clean. I got a new way of thinking. Yeah, you're bringing out the best in me. I got a bit of a history.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
I love teaming with the best. That's why I'm here at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Our research has changed the way the world treats brain tumors, leukemia, and sickle cell. We help kids all across America. Now these kids have hope.
And a sense of humor.
Where'd you get this color?
It's natural.
Give thanks for the healthy kids in your life and give to those who are not. Donate now at stjude.org or shop wherever you see our magnifying glass.
Tired of having feelings? Get rid of those counterproductive emotions of depression, anger, and anxiety. BLI brand medication makes life better. Talk to your doctor today and eliminate all of your problems. BLI brand medication for a better tomorrow.
Welcome back to The Right Hook. Of course, you can follow us all week on the internet at www.righthookny.com. We're also on the Facebook at facebook.com/TheRightHook, twitter.com/RightHookNY. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/Brodigan, ironically enough. We're available for free on the iTunes. We're all over the place. Our next guest, and you know, ever since the Supreme Court decision, there's been yet another renewed focus on both Obamacare and its effect on small businesses and jobs and the economy, to the point where it seems like we're rerunning the 2010 election all over again, just with more energy. So it would only make sense to get one of the freshmen from 2010 to speak on that a little bit, particularly a freshman who has a background in both small business and healthcare. And we're happy to have her from the great state of Tennessee, making her debut on The Right Hook. Congresswoman Diane Black, welcome to The Right Hook.
Hi, it's great to be with you this evening.
How's D.C. treating you today?
Oh, wow. We've got all kinds of great 4th of July events, lots of freedom festivals. It's just a great evening. It's going to be a great day again tomorrow.
So the big topic, again, as it's been, I think, pretty much since you got elected in 2010, deals with Obamacare, especially after the Supreme Court decision, and now that it's a tax increase, its effect on small businesses. And with you being both a registered nurse and a small business owner, I figured you'd probably be a good person to give us perspective on both sides.
Yes, well, I can talk from both of those sides from a very personal vantage point. Number one, I can talk to you about it from a vantage point of being a businesswoman. And certainly I've visited a lot of businesses in my district, and they have told me continuously that regardless of whether it is a tax or whether it's a mandate, it's still a cost of doing business. And we know that this really does paralyze our businesses in moving forward because there's so much uncertainty about just what this cost is going to be.
Okay. And as from the medical side, because I always hear, not firsthand, but I always like doctors and other medical professionals, either the stories about them leaving notes in the office of like if you support Obamacare, don't come here, and about how hard it makes them to do their job, which is to keep people healthy. On the medical end, why is this law so bad?
Well, we know that we have the best health care in the world. It is a system that was broken. And this did nothing really to help our system. The two guiding principles that were supposed to be for this bill, one is to create more access, and the other is to bring down the cost. And we know neither one of those two things happened. So if we try to balance the budget of our healthcare system on the backs of our healthcare providers, you know, after a while, they're going to just say, okay, hands up in the air, I give up. That doesn't help access. That doesn't help cost. That certainly doesn't help quality of care. And we see all of those things being negatively impacted by this bill.
And the complaint from the left is that, oh, well, if you don't like this, what's your plan? And as much as I keep telling people, well, we don't have a plan, we've had like 25 of them, and that was even before we were in the majority. I know you're the freshman class rep for the Republican Policy Committee, so obviously you know about all the plans that we have, but somehow they're not getting heard or not getting noticed by voters that much. What aren't we doing that we need to be doing?
Yes, and I think that you're exactly right, that there has been an overshadowing of the number of solutions that we have to all three of those guiding principles that I talked about. Number one, how do we bring down costs? We've got to look at what the cost driver is. And one of those cost drivers is the fact that we do so much duplication. And having electronic medical health records where we have a hospital talk to a doctor, where doctors can talk to one another so that we don't have repeated tests and we don't repeat a lot of things that really aren't necessary if you send somebody from one doctor to the other. Just being able to talk to one another. We do it in banking. We do it in many other parts of the industry in this world of technology, but we're not doing that in healthcare. So it's one way to bring down costs. The second is accessible. Make it more accessible. We have a number of ideas of how you can do that. One is to relieve the constraint right now of being able to buy insurance across state lines. You can buy car insurance and you can buy house insurance across state lines, but you can't buy health insurance. And we need to relieve that so that there'll be greater access and more competition. More competition also drives down costs. And when we start doing those kinds of things, we can actually see that the quality of care will rise. There'll be more access at a lower cost.
And I know you were just you're finishing up your freshman term in Congress. You're getting ready to run for re-election. And it seems like it must feel like Groundhog's Day for a lot of you because there seems to be the exact same issues you're running on 2012 that got you elected in 2010, mainly, you know, health care. I mean, literally health care, because that's why I think so many people got on our side got elected, but also the economy. Is there a risk to I know this is some conventional wisdom in the media, but is there a risk of campaigning on the exact same issues, like saying with the feeling that we're not moving forward? Or how do we get around that, or like explain to voters who are like, well, we're tired of hearing about health care, talk about jobs?
Well, I think what they have to do is take a look at the record of each individual that they might be supporting in the election. I know that the people in my district will certainly look at my record and say, what have you done to try to address these big issues, such as jobs? I have been a co-sponsor of bills that would help to create a better environment for creating jobs. Government doesn't create a job. And so if we say, oh, well, I created a job. No, we don't create jobs. But what we can do is create an environment by which jobs can be created. And those kinds of things are less regulations, less taxes, less mandates. And so I would expect those that are looking at me and saying, should I reelect her, that they'll be looking at what I have done since I've been there, knowing that we've got a do-nothing Senate, and so we can send things over there to the Senate. So we've got to make sure that we continue to fight. I knew things were bad before I went there, but since I've been there, I know they're even worse than I thought they were, and I will continue to fight. Been able to be successful with a few things, but it is by far and large not enough. We need willing partners in the Senate, and we need willing partners in the White House, and I'm certainly hoping that the people will recognize that, and we'll have a great November the 2nd.
Okay. I've noticed, and particularly up here in a state like New York, where we have a lot of people who – New York's never going to be, as much as I hate to call the system, a quote-unquote red state, but a lot of voters – are giving conservative policies and conservative values a second listen to, even though they don't realize that it's conservative values. Stuff like, you know, lowering healthcare costs, lowering taxes, and reforming pensions, reforming like the public employee unions and stuff like that. When it comes to campaigning this year, and like we had said, a lot of the issues are similar. Is it more of a case where we basically have the same messages, maybe say it a little like more amplified? Or is it just more people open to it this year than they were, say, 2 years ago?
Well, I think people were very hopeful 4 years ago. They heard a president, or they heard a presidential candidate doing a lot of promising that he was going to work across the aisle and that we were not going to have all the bickering and partisanship, and we see that has not happened. As a matter of fact, he has been absent in many of our conversations where he just doesn't even want a dialogue with the other side of the aisle. This president promised that if unemployment was above 8%, or I think even actually above 6.5%, I can't remember the number for sure, that he shouldn't be reelected. We've had unemployment above 8% for over 40 months. So there were a number of problems that this president said he was going to solve, and we haven't seen solutions there. And I think people now are looking at someone else to say, is there a possibility of someone else that can get in there and do a better job with helping to lower those regulations and lower those mandates and taxes so that our job creators really can have an environment by which they can create jobs. I'm hearing it all over my district where people said, you know, I gave this president a try. I thought that he really was going to change things, and the things that have changed have been to the worse and not the better. I'm not going to give him a second chance.
And before I let you go, I try to ask all my guests because I have a younger audience and a lot of people who are looking to, like, make their way in the world or even more specifically political or public life. If you could just talk a little to what brought you to public life, where you decided to run, and any advice you have for someone who's thinking of making the jump themselves.
Sure. Well, what brought me to the table was that at the state level where I first ran for office and got involved was because we similarly had a program here in the state of Tennessee called TennCare, which was Hillary Clinton's idea of universal care. It was not working. It was breaking our state. And I felt as a healthcare professional that I could have a voice in what was going on and hopefully be able to help fix the program. As it turns out, we had to totally dissolve the program here in the state of Tennessee. Universal care did not work here. It will not work across this nation. And then second to that is I'd like to say to the young people is to get a good education, and not necessarily a four-year degree at a college, but it's something they really love to do, whether it's a technical school or on-the-job training, and get some real experiences in their life. And then at that point in time, just let your gut tell you if there's something you are really feel passionate about, that you can make a difference. That's when you need to tip your toe into that water of being in politics. And in the meantime, they don't necessarily have to run for office. They can be involved by believing in someone else that they can help. That gets some great experience as well.
Well, Congresswoman Dan Black from the great state of Tennessee, thanks for joining us tonight. Good luck out in the campaign trail and finally overturning Obamacare. And we will talk to you soon.
And thank you for having me, and have a great 4th of July. Happy birthday, America.
And we'll be right back. Of course, you're listening to The Right Hook on the mighty FTR Radio.
I got your runaway smile in my piggy bank, baby. Gonna cash it right in for a new Mercedes. You were worth 100,000 miles, but you couldn't stay a while. I got your little brown shirt in my bottom drawer, baby. And your little white socks in the top drawer. You were always leaving around. And gone without a sound. Yeah, I'm the first to fall.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
When you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Mocha Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
Please stare into the center of the movie Shame. I'm so happy to be alive. Everything is going to be fine. Did I take my medication today? Keep working hard to stay alive. Goodbye.
Our featured band of the week is a band called Boys Like Girls, which, since we're honoring smart girls, it seemed like an apropos band. Band out of, I believe, the Massachusetts area that I had thought had broken up, but they have got a new album coming out in the fall of this year, so we look forward to that. And again, like most bands that I play, I'm sure they appreciate being on a hyper-partisan conservative podcast. That being said, our third and final guest, excited to talk to about some local house races. Particularly, as I said in the intro, I think a lot of people might be making the mistake of writing off blue states just because, while we probably won't beat Obama in the presidential race, there are a lot of great pickups in congressional seats that would actually shock some people. So do tell us about them and others making her debut on the show.
The kids are back! The kids are back!
Andrea Bozak, welcome to The Right Hook.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
How's D.C. treating you today so far?
D.C.'s good. You know, 4th of July, we got a rare day off in an election year. So I'm hopefully going to see some fireworks tonight.
And speaking of fireworks, that's a great segue to the 2012 congressional races, kind of. And
that's for sure.
I was actually really excited to have you on because I see you're also a New York native. And
I am. Buffalo, born and raised in Buffalo, New York, and very proud Bills fan.
if
that can be such a thing.
I think it can. I mean, eventually the Bills are actually going to make it to a Super Bowl and win one.
They have to, John. They just have to.
But before they do, we have a couple interesting races in that area, and I've been telling people when instead of giving up on like the blue states like Massachusetts or New York when it comes to like the presidential race, there are a lot of congressional pickups we can have, and but particularly in Western New York where there are three. If we lose, I think you and I need to find something better to do with ourselves.
Absolutely.
If you can talk a little bit like, you know, like New York and some like the Northeast and, you know,
sure.
some of the ripe areas for congressional pickups.
Sure, absolutely. We have a, you know, great opportunity to pick up a seat in Western New York in the New York 27th District. The district got even more Republican through the redistricting process. Kathy Hochul, who's, you know, trying every bit of the way to, you know, paint herself as someone that she's not, but the, you know, fact remains that she's in her congressional career voted with the president 83% of the time. She wants to continue Obamacare. You know, obviously with the Supreme Court decision last week, you know, we feel that that's going to be a great issue for us in this district, particularly because voters are extremely frustrated with the government takeover of health care. And, you know, John, I mean, that area of New York has just been so economically depressed throughout the age of manufacturing leaving the state. And the last thing they want is to see more taxes, more health care taxes in the government from between them and their doctor. We have a great candidate, Chris Collins, a businessman who has private sector experience of creating jobs, and I think that's going to be a great contrast between Kathy Hochul, who's really been a career politician her entire life. The other seat that I think, you know, we have, it's going to be tough, but I think we have a great opportunity is the Monroe-centric New York 25th Congressional District with Louise Slaughter, the Democrat who has been in Congress for decades, known as, you know, a very partisan leader in the House. You know, it was her Slaughter solution that gave us Obamacare. And then we have great candidate again, Maggie Brooks, who's a Monroe County executive, who's built a reputation of, you know, an independent leader in a serious legislature there and really got Monroe County back on track. So I think we have, you know, two great pickups there. I think, you know, in the first congressional district down in Long Island, Randy Altshuler is running again. He only lost, I think it was by like 300 votes in 2010. Randy also has the independent conservative and Republican lines this year, which I think are really going to help him going forward to be Congressman Tim Bishop. Also, we have Matt Doheny against Phil Owens in the 21st district. Again, another race that was very close in 2010. Again, unlike 2010, Matt has the independent sign, which I think is really going to help bring him over the threshold in November. Again, a great contrast. Matt Doheny, someone who's been in the private sector, understands what it means to grow jobs against Bill Owens, who, again, is another one of these people who says he's not going to the convention, he's not going to endorse President Obama, but then in Congress, he does another thing, you know, votes alongside him every step of the way. So we feel really good about all four of those opportunities in New York.
Yeah. And one thing I'm looking forward to seeing the day after election night, besides how many seats we win, is looking at the demographic breakdown, because I've been noticing in, like, New York specifically, I don't know if you guys have been noticing in other not Republican-friendly states, a lot of voters, while they may not like the word conservatism, or they, you know, it's been defined mm-hmm. by like social issues for so long, they're at least being more and more receptive to conservative policies, even though they've never actually voted conservative before or still consider themselves Democrats. Have you been noticing that in other states where, fine, maybe if you don't actually say the word conservative, but you actually talk to them about lowering taxes and creating jobs, people are more open to our message than they even were two years ago when we had, like, you know, 72 pickups or something.
Right, absolutely. And I think, John, when you put the word fiscal in front of conservatism, you have a lot of people identifying with that kind of mindset, because I think, you know, even, you know, younger folks who are, you know, having their first job, getting that first paycheck, and then looking and seeing how many taxes are taken out of your gross pay. And I think, you know, especially when, you know, you have high unemployment in a lot of these states, especially like North Carolina, where you have one of the highest employment rates in the country, what we're seeing is a lot of those Democrat members are trying to or even on their websites calling themselves fiscal conservatives. So I think, you know, I think people are identifying with the Republican principles of fewer government, less spending, and less taxes, like we saw in 2010. And I don't really see that changing, that kind of mindset, like, you know, less government, less spending, and less taxes. I think that they, you know, I think a lot of people and what we've seen in our polling are very afraid that we are going down the same path as Europe is right now. And the only way forward is to correct what's going on in Washington with new leaders and not sending back the same tired old politicians like a Louise Slaughter back to Congress.
And you mentioned the unemployment rate in North Carolina, and I know 2008, mm-hmm. everyone was surprised that Obama was able to pick up the state. But even if you look at the polls this year, I think I was reading somewhere that Romney started like 1 point down with independents to now he's up like double digits. One of the seats, Mike McIntyre's seat in the North Carolina
yep.
7th, that's supposed to be like one of our prime pickups. How's that looking so far?
Absolutely. It's looking really good, John. We have, you know, in redistricting, I feel in redistricting in North Carolina, we have the opportunity of picking up a total of 4 seats. We basically already have 2 with Heath Shuler retiring in the North Carolina 11th district. It's the most Republican district in the state in our plus 12. And then in North Carolina 13, Brad Miller also retiring. They have no Democrat candidate on the ballot there. So that's 2 pickups already. Then you move to Mike McIntyre, who is in an R plus 10 district and is being challenged by a popular state senator from the Raleigh area, David Rouser. You know, Mike McIntyre again proclaims to be a blue dog, congressman, so-called moderate, but then votes for things like the failed stimulus plan. He took a CODEL taxpayer-funded trip to Rome last year for his anniversary. So we're definitely going to be calling him out on his hypocrisy. We've already made $2.2 million of TV ad reservations in North Carolina so far.
Speaking of which, and you mentioned this with a couple of New York races also, as you read in on the Internet or in the news about a new Democrat congressman who's decided to not go to the convention, do you ever consider sending that person a fruit basket just for making things that much easier on you?
Well, I want to ask them if they're going to vote for Mitt Romney then. Does that mean they're going to vote for Mitt Romney? Because we can use all the votes we can get, I think. But, you know, I think especially in North Carolina, John, it's interesting. I mean, the president's having his convention in this state, and already 3 both Larry Kissel, Mike McIntyre, and then the candidate who's running in the 11th district, Hayden Rogers, have announced this week that they are not going to the convention. Larry Kissel, if you drew a map between, you know, where his district starts and the convention, it's only 6 miles away. So I think that says a lot about, you know, how the president is doing not only in that state but in the entire country. I haven't seen, you know, any Republican candidate really having to do that with Mitt Romney. But the president is so toxic in a lot of these states and a lot of these swing states like North Carolina where these Democrat congressional candidates can't get away fast enough.
Another interesting pickup for us, possibly in the South, John Barrow in the Georgia 12th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Barrow is, you know, one of our most vulnerable members of Congress. His home base of Savannah got redistricted out in redistricting. His district went from like a Democrat plus 1, meaning a Democrat has an advantage of getting 1 point higher on the ballot than and to an R plus 12 district. I mean, a huge swing in this area. Another one, you know, we have the president in 2008 did a radio commercial endorsing John Barrow. You know, John Barrow has bragged about working hand-in-hand with the president, and in Georgia, that is just not going to fly. As much as, again, he's one of these guys that says he's not going to go to the convention, not going to endorse Obama, but he can't run away from his past. So I think you'll see us holding him accountable for that as well.
And one area of the country that I think we're all interested in looking at is the Midwest, specifically
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, where – you know,
yep.
after spending like, you know, $30 million, I mean, Scott Walker pretty much, you know, destroyed everything liberals believe in a recall race. And also a state like Michigan, where besides being Mitt Romney's hometown, I know that they recently elected like a Republican legislature, or at least the state senate and governor. Well, how are things looking for us, and with a couple of pickups there?
Great. You know, in Wisconsin, we have Congressman Sean Duffy and Congressman Reed Ribble, who are both in marginal districts that are running, you know, excellent campaign operations and that have very flawed Democrat challengers. And if you look at the recall results from from Scott Walker's race, you'll see that in the counties that we need to perform well in those districts, Scott Walker really, Scott Walker won with an overwhelming majority. So we feel really good about that opportunity. I think people in Wisconsin have their jerseys on. I don't think that they're going to take them off between now and November. It's really going to be a fight for that small group of independents. And I think we have Sean Duffy, a prosecutor. He's been a serious legislator in Congress, and then Reed Ribble, former, owned his own roofing company, a small businessman, are going to stand in stark contrast to Duffy's running against the state legislator who was fired in 2010, voted for one of the largest tax increases in state history. Then you have Jamie Wall, who worked, alongside and helped with the Enron collapse. So I think, you have two flawed candidates, two great congressmen that I feel really good about Wisconsin. Same as Michigan, one of the key races there is Congressman Dan Benishek. He's from the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, and his district goes down to the Traverse City market there. He is, again, running against the same challenger that he ran against in 2010. And I think, being a doctor, with everything that's going on, I think you'll agree, John, with the Supreme Court decision, he just
definitely
has, yeah, I think he has such a great message and really can speak to firsthand why having the government come between him and his patients is not a good idea. So I feel really good about that race as well. A lot of these, I think the theme that we've kind of talked about today is a lot of these races, it's kind of like, a bad headache. It's like the same candidates from 2010 that they're running again. And I think that kind of speaks to the recruitment failures of the Democrats this year. I think Steve Israel, obviously being from New York, had high hopes that they were going to have at least 5 pickup opportunities in New York. I don't think any nonpartisan political analyst has said that that's even in the realm of possibilities. So,
and actually, Israel might be in danger after redistricting.
Yeah, I mean that would be great. But I think New York, kind of bringing it back home to New York now. We in 2010 we had more gains in New York than anywhere else in the country, picking up 6 seats. We feel good about keeping all those and getting back the Hochul seat in Western New York, and hopefully in Long Island as well.
And before we let you go, I try and make it a point to ask my first-time guests, because I have a lot of people listening to the show who they're looking to either make their way in just like in life, in the world in general, but even some specific in politics. If you could just talk a little on how you got your start and any advice for people who are looking to like break into public life.
Sure, absolutely. A lot of people, I didn't have the advantage of having, a family that was ever involved in politics. So, I basically just got an internship actually at the NRCC where I work currently when I got out of college, and worked there in the 2006 cycle, and then went on to work for President McCain's campaign. And then, I've been blessed with a lot of political opportunities after that. And then this one, my current job being the Deputy Communications Director at the NRCC. I guess my biggest piece of advice is, and this has worked, knock on wood, so far for me, my career is keep your head down, work hard, and I think opportunities will come your way.
Well, Andrea Bozak, NRCC Deputy Communications Director, thanks for joining us tonight. Go Bills, go Western New York.
Yes, I love it, John. I love it.
and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John. Have a good
Take
one.
Take care.
Bye.
And that's our show. Thank you, Stacey Mott. Thank you, Congresswoman Black. Thank you, Andrea Bozak. We'll be continuing the road to SmartGo Summer 2012 next week with another Smart Goal founder, Terry Kristoff, will also be talking to Congresswoman Renee Elmers, who's actually going to be speaking at the Smart Goal Summit. And, of course, a good friend of the show and the reason why I even have a show in the first place, Lynn Crow will be joining us to talk about her recent win leading Wendy Long to the nomination to run against Senator Kristen Gilligan in the New York Senate race. So that's our show. We will talk to you next week. Boom, done.